Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota National Guard, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, and Beyond the Yellow Ribbon. Get updates and show information at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Your host is former Command Senior Enlisted Leader for the Minnesota National Guard, retired Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I am your host, Doug Wortham. On today's show, we'll check in with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
Today we celebrate a cornerstone of our nation's defense, the birthday of the United States Navy. This monumentous occasion marks not just the establishment of a formidable maritime force, but a legacy of honor, courage, and commitment that spans centuries. From the early days of sailing ships to today's advanced fleets, the Navy has been at the forefront of securing our freedoms and protecting our interests across the globe. With every voyage, every mission, and every deployment, the Navy's dedication to excellence shines brightly. To our sailors, past and present, and to the leadership that guides them, your unwavering resolve and sacrifice are the bedrock of our maritime strength. Your service ensures that the seas remain secure and that our nation stands strong. As we mark this significant anniversary, let us reflect on the Navy's storied history and the bright future ahead. Here's to the United States Navy, a symbol of our nation's power and resolve. Thank you.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me in the studio from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is Ben Johnson, and how appropriate that the Adjutant General would mention the Navy's birthday, because Ben is a Navy veteran. He started his MDVA career in 2014. Minnesota Military Radio was first introduced to Ben in 2016, shortly after he became the legislative director. Since then, he's been on the show quite a few times, almost annually, I think, and he was always on to speak about legislative initiatives with the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And today, not only will we talk about some legislative issues, but we'll also learn about Ben's new role as the Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services within the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. So, Ben, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Doug. Always great to be here.
All right. So, well, happy birthday to the Navy.
Yeah, I forgot.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, it's probably... Well, that's just the way it is, actually. If you were a Marine, you would never forget that, because that seems to be something the Marines never forget, is their birthday.
Even sailors remember the Marine Corps birthday.
Yeah, I think you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and if it wasn't for Flag Day, then I'd probably forget about the Army's birthday. So, I mean, you know, it's kind of an obscure date for the Navy, I guess. But, you know, rather than sit here and, you know, talk about birthdays within the military, our armed forces, let's talk a little bit about you, because you've kind of been in a transition over the last year or so, and you've been wearing a couple of different hats. Obviously, you were the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs Legislative Director. Recently, you were selected to be the Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services. So let's talk a little bit about the legislative stuff, and maybe then we'll get into what this new role is for you. So, legislative session, what kind of stuff can we expect? What happened last year, and what are you looking forward to for this coming session?
Well, thanks for the question. Excited to report that the two-year biennial budget that happened in 2023 and bled into 2024 really resulted in some great outcomes for veterans in the state of Minnesota. So although calendar year 2024, the second half of the session, wasn't headline grabbing, I think we've described it as pretty bland in terms of impactful program investments. A big positive outcome was a third year of a Veterans Omnibus Bill, so Veterans and Military Affairs Bill, that was sort of pulled out of the politics of the moment and took care of some pretty important cleanup issues, some items that were in need of being addressed. Again, not headline-grabbing programs like the post-9/11 service bonus or funding for the new Minnesota Veterans Homes, but some necessary investments in some key roles, and also the opportunity to begin securing a fifth state veteran cemetery for the state of Minnesota.
You know, I know that the Commander's Task Force is an entity that, as a legislative director, you'd spend a lot of time with, because, you know, obviously we want to make sure that the initiatives that the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs is fighting for is in alignment with the things that our Commander's Task Force also wants to do. But this omnibus bill, now you said this is the third time. We know the CTF played a large role in making that happen, but how important is it to an agency like the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and quite honestly to our veteran community to continue to have this omnibus?
It's huge, and the support of the Minnesota Commanders Task Force, or CTF, is critical to that. They are boots on the ground in a lot of areas, working hand-in-hand with the Minnesota Association of County Veteran Service Officers, those county veteran service officers in all 87 counties collaborating with posts and membership of these veteran service organizations really do relay to us in the agency the needs of veterans and their families throughout the state of Minnesota. So having that support and having their fingerprint on things like having an omnibus veterans and military affairs bill is critical.
When we've interviewed the governor on this show, that's always, you know, one of the things we talk about is the omnibus bill and the likelihood that it will continue, understanding the importance of it continuing to separate out the politics. So, you know, in your circles, now that you're transitioning out of legislative, you'll still obviously keep kind of a pulse on it. But in the circles, the people you're talking to, the legislative branch, are you hearing that, hey, this is something we'll continue and it looks like we've really made this into a habit now and it's not going to be a one-off?
Absolutely. And I think it's critical for the listeners to realize that during this election season, now is the time to be talking to candidates for office and telling them what your priorities are as a veteran or a member of the community. And reminding them that a commitment to doing legislation that benefits veterans is legislation that benefits all of the state of Minnesota. And focusing on the omnibus bill as a critical area of support, we have had commitments from a lot of the legislative leaders over the years saying, this is a priority, we're committed to doing that. One legislature doesn't bind the next, so we are always looking for opportunities to get in front of candidates and elected officials and tell them this is important, this is significant. And it should not be a political tool for being held hostage on other areas that are more critical or more concerning. So,
yeah, and I think that you can, you know, show or point to great successes that have come out of having the omnibus bill because you're not tied to something else that both parties can't agree to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we've had really great support from the legislative leaders, regardless of who's in the majority, in terms of veterans issues, both in the Senate and the House. Veterans issues become a bipartisan effort. We've seen really good support and across the aisle, folks from either side of the aisle signing on to co-sponsor legislation that benefits veterans. In terms of MDVA, some of the projects that we've secured some significant funding for have been in some of those purple areas of the state where you could get support from both sides of the aisle and have it be something that they could be proud of at the end of session.
Would you say that over the 8 years that you've spent as the legislative director for the MDVA, is the success of the omnibus, is that like one of the highlights of your time?
Yeah, and it didn't start out that way. It wasn't something that we initially identified as a priority. In some sessions early on, Veterans Affairs was lumped in with other subject matter areas, so there wasn't standalone committees. It wasn't an area of focus. And as we progressed, we got, I think, more focused on making changes to the way we approached our policy and budget development and said, this should be standalone stuff. It should be the bare minimum is to serve veterans, fund veterans' requests, work on policy initiatives. And so having it be the standard, I think, is something that I could point to with some pride. And really, it takes all hands on deck in this case. And the reason that we get omnibus bills is because people commit to it early, because our stakeholders and partners in the Commander's Task Force reach out to their legislators and legislative committees and say, this is a priority. You should focus on this and get them on hot mics and say, do you support it? Yep, we do.
Yeah, it's good to have some of those recordings that we can play back. All right. So you obviously were in that position for just over 8 years. You're transitioning now. You've been selected. You've been wearing the double hats. But there's an end in sight for this transition period where you're going to be able to hand that responsibility off. I imagine you're looking forward to that. So what does that timeline look like for you?
Oh, I am absolutely excited to share with the listeners that we have identified, in fact, onboarded and started yesterday, John Kelly. John Kelly is the new government relations director for MDVA. He joins us after having served in that role for the Department of Commerce. John is a veteran. He's also a veteran of the governor's office, where he served as a policy advisor focused on veterans issues for a number of years. And so the end is in sight in that I'm actually doing turnover with all of our policy and budget issues for this upcoming session, getting him up to speed on where we are at for MDVA, and making sure to reintroduce him to stakeholders that he has met in the past. He's mentioned to me that he was the policy advisor during COVID, so there weren't many face-to-face meetings with these stakeholders. So to get him into a room with the commander's task force and introduce him to their staff and in person shake hands and say, this is the next guy.
And one of the transition responsibilities, apart from introducing him to all those important people, is he's here with us today. We're not going to bring him on the radio. He's in an observer's role. You promised him he wouldn't have to speak, but this is the guy we'll be meeting here on Minnesota Military Radio probably annually again to, you know, hear about what's coming up and in the successes that you all have had at the MDVA.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that for him. I do appreciate Minnesota Military Radio giving us the forum to talk about the things that the legislature is getting right. And occasionally pointing out the things that they missed on that we're going to come back for another bite at the apple for the next year.
Yeah, well, this is a great place to take a break, and we'll come back. We'll talk about 2025, that legislative season, and then some more about your new role. We're speaking with Ben Johnson. He's the Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. In the studio with me is Ben Johnson. He's the Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. And Ben, before we went to break, obviously we talked about the legislative session last year. You've got a new legislative director on board for the MDVA. His name is John Kelly. I imagine that you can't just dump the 2025 legislative responsibilities into his lap right now. There's going to be some transition there, but I'm thinking maybe you could just give us a brief overview as we look ahead. What can we expect for the 2025 legislative session out of MDVA?
Certainly. Thanks for the question. I think the reality is that all eyes at this point are on the election. So in the Minnesota legislature, the House of Representatives are all up for election, and there's one special election in the Minnesota Senate. So control of the legislature is critical this coming during the election season into the next biennial budget development process. Again, as I mentioned earlier, veterans issues really are bipartisan, nonpartisan efforts. So all I would say to listeners is make sure you're registered, get out and vote. Your voice does matter, and make sure that when people are knocking on your doors that you're telling them what your priorities are. In terms of the next biennial budget development process, in 2025, we will be setting the agency's budget. We will also be pursuing some policy initiatives. So what we've been working on all summer up until this point is developing our needs and identifying areas where we could invest additional resources, some additional funding. As the state goes forward, we put together a bunch of requests. We call them change items, but we've got our base funding, and we'll be putting that together and working with the governor's office and other state agencies to develop our needs and prepare them for release to the legislature in January. So we've got some deadlines coming up in that process, but working hard with the partners in the agency, both the healthcare side and programs and services, to put together those needs.
And, you know, obviously you're the Deputy Commissioner of Programs and Services. We do have the healthcare side at the MDVA. But the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, that budget, although we talk about the omnibus, you still have to compete, however, because there's only going to be so much money in the pot. And so when you talk about putting the change items together, are those items that are including for like additional programs or resources available to our veterans? Is that the kind of stuff that goes into a change request?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We develop specific requests for areas where we either know there's a shortfall, some area where we didn't receive sufficient funding in a previous budget. We've got specific programming that's coming online that's new. One example that I have is our collaboration with healthcare. We've got a new office of Veterans Community-Based Services, and that's an area where we are putting resources out into the community in non-VA healthcare settings so that we can get upstream in those places where veterans are not connected with the federal VA healthcare system. And that's an opportunity for us to grow a program that really does collaborate with our partners out in greater Minnesota and some nonprofit or for-profit healthcare systems. That's an area that we didn't have a very specific amount of funding for. We had a pilot project. We develop a change item and say we're going to expand this, and there's an opportunity to do more in that regard.
And when you're developing these change items and we're talking about expanding a program, for example, or requesting additional funding, I would assume that there's a requirement to do the analysis to ensure that we're not asking for more money just to ask for more money. It's, hey, there's a legitimate need here because we've identified this gap in a service or something that we need to provide to our veterans. Is that a true statement?
It is. And the teams have been really thoughtful of what they're asking for, knowing that, as you mentioned, we're competing with finite resources at the state level. And we've got to put together a presentation at the division level and present it to Commissioner Brad Lindsay and say, Commissioner, this is an area we've identified where we need some additional resources or a new opportunity to serve veterans better, and put it in front of him and make our pitch internally and say, this is the area that we're looking at. We work with our finance department and MDVA's central office to evaluate the needs, understand how much you add an FTE, a full-time equivalent, which is essentially a position. How much is that going to cost? Program needs, how much are we going to need for outreach efforts, travel, putting together programs like the gun locks, trying to secure gun locks in support of our efforts to end veteran suicide, making sure we have the resources to get those things out into the community. But it is a very thoughtful process, and it has, again, as I said, it's been going on all summer and refining and getting it ready and put that final pitch into the commissioner for his support.
I would imagine that includes conversations with some of the external stakeholders. For example, the MDVA has a very good relationship with MACV, for example, right, in the fight to end veteran homelessness. Well, that doesn't just happen. It does come at a cost, meaning money. So I would imagine that then your team has some of those conversations, too, to find out maybe additional needs that they have so we can better support them and take care of our veterans.
Absolutely. The team that is working with MACV, our Veterans Homelessness Team in SOAR, have identified opportunities for additional resources, whether it be the supportive housing, wraparound services, whether we're talking additional units, support for renovations, working with MACV, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, to make sure that they have what they need to do the job. And it is an ongoing conversation. What is the actual need? Where did we miss? How can we do better?
Yeah. So in this last just a few minutes here, let's talk a little bit more about your role now as a deputy commissioner. So obviously that means that at certain instances, you would need to step in and perform or act as the commissioner in his absence. But you have this programs and services entity. What is that? What does that mean? And really, what's your responsibility as a deputy commissioner?
Certainly. The Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, again, divided into two divisions, healthcare, which is our skilled nursing long-term care side, and then programs and services, which is divided into three areas of focus. We've got our veterans programs and memorial affairs. Memorial affairs is the cemeteries that we're currently operating and potential for the fifth one up in northern Minnesota. Veterans education and occupational resources. These are our campus reps. These are the folks helping veterans that are coming back from their service trying to get some additional education. They work that. We've also got within that office our veterans preference office, which is those folks that work to support veterans' occupational support, offer veterans occupational support, and look to make sure that they have access to the coverage and protections of the veterans preference law in the state of Minnesota. And then third, I would say one of those critical boots on the ground is our veterans claims office, claims and outreach. It's our veterans services team. And they have folks that are working on benefits and pensions applications supporting county veteran service officers. That is where our tribal veteran service office lives. And that is another area of sort of critical contact with the community where we're working to develop needs and support CVSOs throughout the state of Minnesota.
Yeah, and I think it's important, again, to clarify that, you know, you mentioned the claims. You, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, are not the federal VA. So your team, the claims team, although they are able to help assist a veteran with providing a claim, it still goes to the federal VA. We are not, the MDVA is not, the entity approving those claims.
Correct. Our goal, though, is to make sure that every claim that gets submitted on behalf of a Minnesota veteran is as fully developed as possible so that those folks can be successful. And that's another partner. I think we call it sometimes Big VA. VA on the regional office in St. Paul and more broadly across the country has a critical obligation to serve veterans. And our mission in Minnesota is to make sure that veterans are taken care of, that they are receiving the benefits that they've earned. And that team, in collaboration with VA in terms of the claims requests or claims submissions, are being taken care of.
Quickly, any goals or priorities that you have for your team? Program and services?
We are committed to securing those final two declarations of veterans homelessness in the state of Minnesota. We're working on Hennepin County and Ramsey County. Those are the last two continuums of care to be achieved before we get that statewide declaration. And so that's critical. And I think the other critical component here is making sure that we are working with that healthcare division as well. And I think that the veterans services folks are working really hard. We've got a lot of collaboration and overlap that we're trying to develop to make sure that all the veterans in our homes are taken care of, but also veterans in greater Minnesota that may not have access to a dedicated benefits advocate, that they have those resources as well.
Yeah, I think this would be a great time to also plug a benefit that'll be closing here the end of November, and that is the disaster relief grants, which are available to the veterans are in affected flood area from the flooding back in June. So, Ben Johnson, we run out of time here, but I just want to say thanks so much for coming into Minnesota Military Radio, sharing congratulations on the new position, and we look forward to visiting with John Kelly down the road to get more legislative updates. So thanks for joining Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you, Doug.
You bet. That's Ben Johnson. He's the Deputy Commissioner over at the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs and Programs and Services. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. In a moment, we're going to have a conversation about epilepsy care for veterans. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, Brad Lindsay.
October 13th marks the 249th birthday of the U.S. Navy, which traces its roots back to the early days of the American Revolution. On October 13th, 1775, the Continental Congress established a naval force, hoping that a small fleet of privateers sailing independently could wage technical raids to attack British commerce and offset British sea power. 2 years after the end of the war, Congress sold off the last ship of the Continental Navy, then called for the construction of a half dozen frigates, signaling the beginning of what we now call the United States Navy. There are approximately 475 ships in both active service and the reserve fleet. Of these, approximately 50 ships are proposed or scheduled for retirement by 2028, while approximately 90 new ships are in either the planning or ordering stages or under construction. Our U.S. Navy delivers combat-ready forces to win conflicts and wars while maintaining security. We salute its members as a force to be reckoned with.
Thank you, Commissioner Lindsay. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Dr. Rupert Exconde began his career at the Minneapolis VA in 2001. He went into private practice from 2007 and in 2022 returned to the Minneapolis VA, where he is a member of the Epilepsy Center of Excellence. Here in the studio to talk about epilepsy care for veterans is Dr. Rupert Exconde. Doctor, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, it's interesting. We were talking ahead of the show, and I found out that you actually did some residency time at the Minneapolis VA back in from 97 to 99, and then you decided to leave to go to Cleveland because you were going to get some more training, which is where you got some additional training in epilepsy care, and then eventually you came back to Minnesota and then found your way back to the VA. So tell us a little bit about your history and kind of how that transition worked for you and what ultimately got you to the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yeah, so when I was a resident doing my training, my continuity clinic was at the VA, and I really love working with the veterans. They are very, very respectful. They really appreciate what we're doing for them. And one thing that I realize is that I think it's a military culture. If we tell them to do something, they just do it. They just say, yeah, just tell me what you want.
Except for the privates. The privates don't always do exactly what they're told.
Yeah, and that's actually very important for us as doctors, especially when taking their medications. And we're going to talk about this later, people with seizures or epilepsy. It's very important to take their medications. If not, they have breakthrough seizures, which can be really bad.
Well, so you mentioned, you know, a seizure. You mentioned epilepsy. And maybe we can just start there then. And you can talk a little bit about what the difference is between a seizure or an have someone have an epilepsy.
So as you may or may not know, the brain uses electrical impulses to work. And these electrical impulses are highly regulated. When a person has seizures, there is abnormal excessive firing of these brain cells, abnormal electrical activity. And depending on what part of the brain is affected, it will manifest as, say, if it's the part of the brain that controls movement, the person may convulse. That's very dramatic. That's what we typically recognize as seizure, they convulse. If it's part of the brain that controls vision, they may see sparks of light. If it comes from the part of the brain that controls smelling, they may smell, common ones, burning rubber. Or taste, they may taste, they say metallic taste. So it is different depending on what part of the brain is involved. So that is seizure. Epilepsy is a condition of the brain where there is tendency to have recurrent unprovoked seizures. We don't treat seizures, we treat epilepsy. Another example is people who have alcohol withdrawal seizures, they withdraw from the alcohol, they seize. That we don't put them on long-term medication because that's not epilepsy.
And so that's that treatment where their body is getting whatever that toxin is out.
That's good.
Okay. So epilepsy, you know, how common is it?
So 1 in 26 people will have will develop epilepsy in their lifetime. 1 in 10 will have at least will have one seizure in their lifetime.
Now, 1 in 26 will develop epilepsy. 1 in 10 will experience a seizure. That just seems really high to me. Is this something that has increased over the last number of years, or has this been a pretty common number for as long as you've been doing this type of work?
Yeah, I've been doing this for over 20 years, and the numbers have stayed the same.
That's really, really interesting. Okay, so knowing that it could be pretty common with those numbers that you've detailed, what kind of medication then is available that someone could take to hopefully control?
So that's the good news. So we have a number of medications. When I was in training, we had 5. Now we have over 20. And the good news, too, is that 70% of people with epilepsy, medication will control them 100%.
So with the 20 different medications you're talking about now, is that because, you know, that percentage of success – you might have to trial multiple types of that medication to finally find the one, but there's that rare number of people, you'll go through all 20 and there's no impact.
Actually, we don't go through all the 20, and that's very important because we know we have data on this since 2000. Once you have tried more than 2 medications, the chance of controlling seizures 100% is very low. It's less than 3%. So the recommendation is, if you have tried at least 2 medications and the seizures are not controlled 100%, then we have to go to the other treatment options. And that's where the Epilepsy Centers of Excellence plays a big role.
Okay. So, you know, one of the things that if it doesn't work, we refer there. But is there anything ahead of that that is often recommended if it's not medication?
So, yeah, so start with medication. General neurologists, any general neurologist should be able to recognize, diagnose epilepsy. They should be able to try medication and control the seizures 70% of the time. But, again, after those 2 medications have been tried and there's no 100% control of seizures, then they should be referred to an epilepsy center. And within the VA system, we have these epilepsy centers of excellence throughout the country.
I'm just wondering if, are there like any warning signs? Like, is there something that what I would appear to be a normal, healthy person, maybe a little overweight, but, you know, normal and healthy, would there be any like warning signs that I should be thinking about or considering?
before a seizure?
Is there anything like that that would, you know, hey, you know what, we might want to get you checked out because there's a potential. You have that propensity to be one of 10 or whatever.
Yeah, so depending on the what part of the brain is involved. If you keep on experiencing something that are very similar, say you keep on seeing flashing light, same color, same part of your vision, lasting for a few seconds to a minute, you may want to go to a neurologist. Or if you keep on smelling something like burning rubber or smoke, cigarette smoke, but there's no such thing, it's not in your environment, then you may want to be seen. Or a common one too is a sensation of deja vu. A specific part of the brain will generate that, and people tell us that, oh, this sounds like it feels like this just happened, and that keeps recurring. If that's happening, then you may want to be seen. Another one that I remember, too, is that I had one veteran before who kept on having this sensation in his stomach that's rising. He was evaluated for gastrointestinal issues and was treated for that. The medication didn't work. Finally, he had an actual big convulsion. And when we treated him, those symptoms actually got better because those were actual seizures.
Well, we'll take a quick break here, and then we'll come back. And I want to talk about some of the consequences if it's uncontrolled. And then I want to hear more about the Center of Excellence so you can talk about that, about the good work that's going on over at the VA. This is Minnesota Military Radio. We're speaking with Dr. Rupert Exconde from the Minneapolis VA in the Epilepsy Center. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Doug Wortham. Dr. Rupert Exconde is in the studio with me. He's from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system, and he is over at the Epilepsy Center of Excellence at the Minneapolis VA. Doctor, before we went to break, we were talking about medication. What if the medication doesn't work? You provided some statistics like 1 in 26 people will develop epilepsy at some point in their lives. 1 in 10 will experience some type of a seizure in their lifetime. The good news is that medication's come a long way. However, medication doesn't always work in, what'd you say, 30% of people, the medication doesn't work, but there's other things that can be done, surgery, but the big thing here is, you know, recognize it, go see your neurologist to have them do some analysis. But what I'm interested to hear about is what are some of the consequences? Like if this just goes uncontrolled and I don't do anything about it and I've got epilepsy or somebody has epilepsy, and nothing is done. What are those consequences? What happens?
So the worst consequence would be early death. There's a condition we call sudden death, sudden unexplained death in epilepsy. It's called SUDEP. So you know, people can die from seizure when they have epilepsy if they're in a car accident or they get injured. But with this condition, most likely, it's affecting the way they breathe and their heart function during a seizure. They can pass away because of that. And it's not very common. It's 1 in 1,000. But if seizures are controlled, the number can be as high as 1 in 100. So that's one, number one reason we want to control all of the seizures. Of course, if you have ongoing seizures, it reduces the quality of life. Difficult, to, at least in Minnesota, you cannot drive for 90 days if you're having seizures. You have to be seizure-free for at least 90 days. It limits the type of work that you can apply to. Taking medications have side effects. So if you are taking a number of medications, you may feel tired, dizzy, sleepy. So it reduces that. A number of people with epilepsy will have a higher incidence of mood disorders. Depression and anxiety is part of the condition, and again, because it's involving the brain, it's hard to think. It affects their cognitive function.
And so, when we talk about putting someone on medication, you know, one of the 20 drugs, let's say it's going to work, does it totally then control seizures, or is there still that chance?
So, 70% of the time, we can control their seizures with medication. The problem would be that 30%.
Okay.
Whatever we do, whatever medication, they will still have seizures.
But when you say you'll control the seizure, does that mean you actually control it where it doesn't even happen, or it's less of?
It's completely controlled.
Okay. So. All right. And so then,
Seizure-free.
Okay, so that's important to distinguish. And then, you know, obviously the reasons why you would want to do that is because you can then have an increased quality of life. And of course, then, you know, hopefully we can live a little bit longer, too, by, you know, ignoring those symptoms. And you'd mentioned like a car accident and, you know, different things that bring on a seizure. So trauma, obviously, plays a big role
as
well.
That's correct.
All right, so let's talk about the Center of Excellence. What is the VA Epilepsy Centers of Excellence?
So in 2008, the National VA established this network of epilepsy centers of excellence. There are 19 of them now, or of us now, all over the country. Each of these centers will have neurologists who are specialty trained in epilepsy, like myself. And then at our Minneapolis VA, there's Dr. Stephanie Reeder, who's the director. We have surgeons who work with us who do this, will perform surgery if needed. We have Dr. McGovern and Dr. Lamb. We have highly trained electroneurodiagnostic technologists. There's Melanie Seal, Valerie Howard, and Yulia Volkov. Those are the people who we work with. We have a neurology pharmacist working with us as well. So each of these centers will have this people who specialize in evaluating and treating people with difficult to control epilepsy.
Do you know why Minneapolis was chosen? Is this like a regional thing?
It is regional.
Okay. And so, you know, obviously we're in Minnesota, which, you know, we brag about how great the Minneapolis VA is and our St. Cloud VA, Minnesota leading the way. But as a region, then you're going to potentially have veterans from outside of Minnesota come to receive this care.
That's correct. We have patients coming from Iowa, from North, South Dakota, Nebraska. They come to our center for evaluation and treatment.
And so what does that evaluation and treatment look like? I mean, what kind of process would somebody expect to come in and receive?
Yeah, so if they're not responding to medication, we put them in the hospital for at least for approximately 5 days. We hook them up to the EEG with video. So we're recording their brain activity. First thing we want to make sure is that they are actually, the diagnosis is correct. It's epilepsy, because if it's not, then they will not respond to medication. Once we prove that, then we want to make sure that they're on the right medication. And if they're really not responding, then that's when we consider surgery. And with surgery, we have to prove that the seizures are coming from part of the brain, hopefully only one part of the brain. And if we're able to prove that, we want to be able to prove that it is safe to take that part of the brain out. Because, say, if it's coming from a part of the brain that controls language, we may control the seizures, but the person will not be able to talk. So that's not good. Or if it's in the part that controls memory, they will not remember anything. They may be seizure-free, but then their quality of life will be affected.
All right. Well, Doctor, I mean, just a lot of great information. We appreciate you coming in to Minnesota Military Radio. Appreciate the great work you're doing out there at the Epilepsy Center of Excellence and the work you do to take care of our veterans.
Thank you.
You bet. That's Dr. Rupert Exconde, again, from the Minneapolis VA healthcare system. And he's here talking to us about epilepsy care for veterans. On Saturday, October 5th, the Serving Our Troops organization held an event at Roy Wilkins Auditorium where they served steaks to family members of the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division soldiers who are deployed in Kuwait and Jordan. While there, I spoke with Senator Amy Klobuchar. Here's that conversation. Minnesota's senior senator, Amy Klobuchar. Senator, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you. And it's what a great moment to be on here as I watch these families. I got to get over and serve. I don't know what they'll do without me serving up the mashed potatoes. You know, I got to get out there. But the point is, this is a moment to honor our troops. Minnesota National Guard, best in the country, right now in Kuwait and Jordan, of course, in other places around the world, while their families, and I cannot tell you the joy of watching these little kids and their parents, grandparents wave at the screen as they saw their soldier, and now they're going to be able to talk to them live. And it's just, they're serving along with that soldier.
Now, Senator, you've been part of these events many times. Obviously, each different one holds something special in your heart. But, you know, today here in St. Paul doing this, and you already mentioned seeing these kids. But how special is an event like this to you?
It is incredibly special, especially at this moment, as we know this conflict in the Mideast. We hope that we can get some kind of a resolution and agreement, and our government's working to do that. But we're standing with our allies right now, so the purpose couldn't be more important. So you start with that. And the second thing is, as people are so divided over many, many things politically, I'm not getting into it, but the one thing that brings us together is support for our troops and the work that they do. And it makes you kind of step back and think, this is what America is all about.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, an event like this, it doesn't matter what side of the aisle you tend to lean towards. What we can agree on is that taking care of our troops, taking care of our families is extremely important. And so that brings me to the next question. That is, you know, here in Minnesota, we are well known for the way we take care of our troops and we support our families. As a senator from Minnesota, how proud are you about the way this community comes together to take care of our troops?
There's nothing like this anywhere else in the nation. We've got restaurateurs giving it all ready. They were ready to go overseas just to serve our troops. They've donated food. They've donated their time. And it's just such a Minnesota moment that they're all willing to do this.
Well, we appreciate you. And I can see they're waving. They want you over to get those potatoes going. But
no one can eat unless I'm there. Kidding.
Of course not. But, Senator, thank you so much just for swinging by, saying hi to Minnesota Military Radio. Yeah. We appreciate your support to our troops, to our families. And just thanks and keep on doing what you're doing.
Well, great to be here. Thank you.
All right. You bet. Okay. That is Senator Amy Klobuchar.
Go Vikings.
There we go. Go Vikings. Before we close out today's show, I'd like to say thanks for tuning in to Minnesota Military Radio. We appreciate your continued support. We strive to bring you quality content each week and look forward to hearing your feedback and suggestions for future topics and guests. Please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us to send us your thoughts. As I mentioned previously, the 34th Infantry Red Bull Division is currently deployed to Kuwait and Jordan. I spent the day here in the studio speaking with a few of those Red Bull soldiers who are deployed, so over the next 2 weeks, we'll play out those interviews. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Doug Wortham, your host on Minnesota Military Radio. I hope you have a productive week and you find a way to thank and honor those who have and those who continue to serve and sacrifice so we can enjoy the liberty and freedom this great country has to offer.